Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everybody, and welcome along to the Forza Italian Football Podcast Women's European Championship Special. I'm here with Ewan, of course I am. Ewan, how are you keeping?
Hello, I'm all right. I've watched the first game. What a thriller, may I add.
Yeah, well, the first game has just been played. England beat Austria 1-0. We're here. Obviously, we've got that little bit of luxury because Italy don't play until Sunday the 10th. So we've got that little bit of extra time. But the competition's up and running. And I've got to be honest, I was very much looking forward to it. And the game today didn't actually take anything away from that. It's nice that the tournament is happening. The fact that the game today was played at Old Trafford in front of 67,000 people or whatever it was is astonishing.
And I think it was a full sellout, wasn't it? So that would make it 76,000.
Okay.
If everybody went.
I saw 67 floating about during the match. But I had also seen beforehand that it was a sellout as well. But yeah, it's nice that it's here. The atmosphere around it seems to be like no other women's football tournament I can remember in my lifetime. I remember the 2019 World Cup was elevated above anything I had seen previously. And this is on another level yet again, which, given the season we've had with the Champions League, I mean, every club in the Champions League smashed a record in their respective country. Barcelona did it about 3 times. So it's nice to see that women's football is still riding this wave. And are you as excited for this tournament as I am and so many others seem to be?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's sort of actually being here. I'm not in a... I don't think there's no games happening in Liverpool, I don't think. Mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily feel like you'd really know it's happening unless you are already interested in football. But what I'm more intrigued by is that if England go as far as they're expected to, how it's going to snowball, because it definitely will. It started with that ginormous crowd at Old Trafford, which, incidentally, if we really want to get into it, is not a very easy stadium to get to for a lot of people. And then, you know, there's going to be games that, unfortunately, at like training grounds at City and stuff. But it all the interest should snowball quite quickly in the way that men's tournaments do, where, you know, it picks up people as it goes along. That should happen tenfold, ideally, with this, because England are very good.
The final's already sold out. Like, the tournament the tournament kicked off today, and the final at Wembley is sold out. I think it's brilliant. And I know it's the way tournament go, it's kind of like a raffle for tickets or whatever way it's done. But I think already, I was writing about this earlier, I think it's more than something like 500,000 tickets have been sold for the tournament so far, which is just astonishing. Mm. That's absolutely amazing stuff. But Italy are there, Ewan, and that is, of course, why we are here to talk about this competition is to preview the Azzurri. Now, they're in Group D. There are four groups, and they're in the fourth of those groups. And it's not the easiest of groups that could have been drawn in, but when there's only 16 teams in the competition, that level is a little bit higher across the board. They've got Belgium, France, Iceland, and of course themselves in the group. Now, they will back themselves to go through, but Belgium and France in particular are two very, very respectable teams. France will be one of the most fancied sides in the tournament, along with Spain. I guess their injuries haven't helped them in that regard. England are in that category as well. Germany and probably even Sweden are in that group. There's a really competitive group.
The Dutch are seen in that light as well, aren't they?
There's another one, yeah. There's another one. So Italy aren't in that category, but they're probably in that group just behind that bunch with another couple of teams. So if we look at this, obviously there's when we talk about knockout competitions, we're kind of used to talking about there being a group stage, a round of 16, then a quarterfinal. This goes straight from the groups into the quarterfinal. What would be a successful tournament for this Italy group, just before we start going through the squad and the rest of the chat?
Assuming, I think I'm right in saying that the route they've got would result in Sweden or the Dutch most likely in a quarterfinal, who are, as we said, sort of seen as up there with the tournament favourites. So I think, really, if you'd be super realistic, you'd have to say a well-contested quarterfinal, even if it ends in defeat, would probably be the most sort of level what you'd accept. It'd be annoying that you come up against someone so good, but you know, it's something, it's somewhere to build from, and it certainly couldn't be viewed as a failure.
Yeah, I think that's about right. If they crash out in the group stages, it's disappointing. If it's a close call, they might get away with it. But I think the way the fixtures fall, it's not great, is it? Because they get things going against France. So Italy's kickoff times, these are all Central European times. They kick off on Sunday, July 10th at 9 p.m. against France in Rotherham. Then they play on the 14th of July at 6 o'clock against Iceland. And then the last group game is on the 18th at 9 o'clock again against Belgium. And that one's in Manchester as well as the Iceland game. They'd probably rather have played Iceland first and then possibly France last. But they might be trying to make up lost ground after the first game, because France is probably the most difficult game in the group. And you don't want that first up, do you?
No, well, France, I've been reading about their coach. It's quite interesting. they seem like a very, like I said, so they're undoubtedly one of the better teams in the competition. They've got lots of very, very high-level players. But they've basically been at war with each other for years.
Oh, France have?
Yeah, they've got this.
No way, I won't believe
this coach.
French national team.
Yeah, I mean, it's just all almost traditional, isn't it? I mean, obviously, there was the one element of it that I think we all heard about, which probably won't delve into too much, because I don't know what the legal side of it is at the moment, but the supposed...
This isn't just Patreon either, by the way, so...
Attacked.
Yeah.
PSG players. There's that. But then there's just general, apparently, the coach is seen as a complete dictator, basically. Yeah. She's meant to be really horrible. There's a couple of very good players who aren't in the squad because she's not picked them, who they're part of the Lyon team that absolutely would normally be in the squad based on talent. But the war is such, the ongoing war is such that they're not involved. So it seems like a lot of people's assessment of France is, they're fantastic, but don't be surprised if, like, they're horrendous. Or if, yeah, you know, if they completely fall apart. And that's what makes this group quite interesting, because the, in theory, best team could fall away in such a manner that it opens the door for an Italy or an Iceland.
So what you're telling me is Italy are going to top the group?
Yeah, that's what I'm leading towards, yeah.
Okay, good. Right, well, let's go through the squad, shall we? Because We've both reacted to this squad announcement, as has pretty much everyone who follows Italian women's football. And along the same lines, really, most people seem to react. So It's a funny one, but the goalkeepers kind of picked themselves. There's Giuliani Durante and Scroffenegger, which that name is not a pleasant one to have to spell, let's be honest, when you're used to writing about Italian football. The defenders, we've got Saragama, Elisa Bartoli, Valentina Bergamaschi, Lisa Boatin. I always get that wrong because it just doesn't look like an Italian name and it throws me. We've got Lucia Di Guglielmo, Martina Lenzini, Elena Linari, and Maria Luisa Filangieri. Kind of all picking themselves. Juventus and Roma, heavy. Obviously, there's a Milan representative in Bergamaschi and Sassuolo and Filangieri in there as well. Midfield is a little bit more varied, I suppose. We've got Aurora Galli, who plays for Everton. We've got Manuela Giuliano, Valentina Cernoia, Arianna Caruso, Martina Rosucci, and Flaminia Simonetti of Inter. Now, her selection was one of the controversial ones because of who was left out. Giada Greggi of Roma obviously didn't make it in. And then up top, we've got Agnese Bonfantini, Barbara Bonansea, Cristiana Girelli, Valentina Giacinti, Daniela Sabatino, and Martina Piemonte. Now, Piemonte is the other one who kind of raised some eyebrows, but less because of her presence, but really because Anna Maria Sartorini hasn't made the squad. Now, we both kind of reacted to this in the same way, which is, you know, that emoji with the really wide eyes. That was my actual face when I saw this squad, because I first saw, where's Greggi? And then I continued and I was like, hang on. Sartorini's not in it either. Sartorini and Greggi, arguably two of the most important players for a team who were probably even better than Juventus for much of the second half of the season, haven't made it. And I know you can only choose 23, but they had to be two of them. Surely they had to be two of them.
Yeah, it's mad. In terms of something that, I feel like I've noticed this on Twitter, maybe it's cruel, but something that can make male Italian football fans who don't care about the women's football suddenly get into it and be talking about it, which seems to be the pet case the last couple of weeks, is a nice little scandal that makes it seem like there's a big Juve bias going on at the expense of Roma. I've seen a lot of tweets of that nature from people I've not seen talk about the women's game at all before, because there's an insane amount of Juve players, but
there's nine.
It's not without merit.
You know, it's not really like there's five straight Scudetti.
Yeah, well, you could probably make a pretty handy squad just of Juve players. Mm-hmm. But yeah, for me, Sertorini is the one that, in terms of the profile of those in the squad, I do find it odd. To me, she's apart from Bonfantini, I say she's a very different player to those that are there.
Yeah,
obviously, they tend to play with the front three, but it seems to be three what you'd say are number nines, really. Like, you know, Giacinti, Bonansea, Girelli, Sabatino, Piemonte. I put them all as a central striker in my head, but she's going to play with three of them. Whereas Sertorini is a much more natural wide player,
yeah,
and a very different player. None of those names I said do you see consistently going up and down a wing and putting crosses in. Obviously, they can all do a highly effective job up front, but it's narrow.
I think Bonansea, particularly with Italy, more so than with Juve, likes to hug the touchline that little bit more. So she likes to be that little bit... She has that little bit of trickery, but... Yeah, I
feel
I
like that was the raw pace
it.
With her, though.
Yeah,
she's not slow, but
she's not.
Yeah.
Sartorini is lightning. And you were right to talk about Bonfantini, because Bonfantini is the immediate person that you think of as being the most similar to Sartorini in that squad. Now, could you leave Bonfantini out of it? I don't think so, because I think she's too good and too impactful off the bench. We've seen that in the Champions League with Juventus this season and in basically everything she played in. But it's, I don't like picking on individuals who are there. And I really like Martina Piemonte, but I don't know what she necessarily brings to this group that they wouldn't already have. Whereas with Sartorini, you're quite obviously missing something. I can't get it.
In terms of changing a game, so say you're against Iceland, you're expected to win, and it's the 75th minute and it's 0-0 and you can't seem to break them down. If you then chuck on Piontek, yes, it's a different player, it's a different striker, but it's not a different type of player. So Bonfantini is that option, that's a different type of player, but if you can chuck two of them on, two players who can run any defence ragged, that's, to me, it just gives you more options. I think I think there's too much of the same in that part of the squad. You know, they're blessed in the sense that that is a stupid set of forwards.
Yeah.
It's mad.
Also, but the defence is also a bit silly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's weird because obviously we know way more about this team than other teams.
Mm.
Like in my head, I'm looking at them thinking, well, surely they win the whole thing because I know that one's really good. And then you realise the level that some other people are at. But yeah, I just think it looks a bit one-dimensional in that area of the pitch. But not lacking quality. That's what's weird about it. There's loads of quality, but it's just lots of similar quality.
Daniela Sabatino was the capocannoniere. She's not going to start. She's not going to start the game. It's going to be Bonanza on the left, Girelli in the centre, and probably Giacinti or possibly Bonfantini on the right. Right?
Yeah, I think the first three. Mm. Well, no, you didn't say it in that order. Not Bonfantini, basically. I think it'll be
okay.
Girelli, Bonanza, Giacinti.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's mad, isn't it?
Silly. It's absolutely silly. It is ridiculous. But speaking of Giacinti, actually, it does look like she's going to go to Roma. Now, I remember we spoke after the Coppa Italia final, and I think we were speaking German as well, and I was just saying, like, get Benedetto Leon onto the pitch, because you've got Sertorini on the right, Leon on the left. Giacinti at Roma playing in the middle of those two. That's a joke. I'm very uncomfortable with that as a prospect.
I mean, they're going to be stacked in the way Juve are in that position, because they've already got a couple of fantastic forwards anyway in Pirone and Paloma Lazaro, who have been fantastic, particularly in the second half of the season. It's not even necessarily an area where you'd say they need to improve, but then when you factor in how amazing Juve are and the options they've got, you do need to improve. And I think Giacinti is the obvious way, so she's the most available and high quality striker in the league, basically. And that will be, I mean, even though you say that makes you uncomfortable, and obviously you're tied to.
No, I'm not. I have no ties.
Yeah, sure. You're tied to another team. Surely anyone getting, in theory, on paper, closer to Juve is good.
Mm.
And I think her going to Roma closes that gap more than if she mended her fences at Milan and they tried to be good again.
you know the way the season that's just finished was probably the worst season Valentino Giacinti has ever and will ever have as a professional footballer. Like, it was an absolute mess, right? Mm. The Serie A Femminile season is just 22 games long. She still scored 10 goals. Like, that's a good return to get into double figures. That's a very good return, considering it was a disaster. You cannot overplay how much of a disaster that season was.
What was, I mean, I'm not especially nervous off the top of your head, but what was the most she got in one game? Because both Milan and Fiorentina had this habit of bad results, but then whack someone 7-0.
I don't have that off the top of my head, but I remember us chatting early in the season when Milan spanked someone and she didn't score.
Hmm.
So yeah. Even when she was at Milan, like, it wasn't quite her usual self of scoring 5 in a game and being angry at not getting the 6th. But yeah, I don't know. I'm quite hopeful for Italy because I think they have enough to do well. What I would say, though, is that I think they'll struggle when it comes to perhaps a little bit of physicality, perhaps defending set pieces isn't going to be the easiest thing for them to do. There's not an awful lot of height in there, is there? But That said, Juventus and Roma were defensively excellent, and all of the defenders there, except for Bergamaschi, who will probably start, are Juventus and Roma. Filangieri is probably not going to play a minute, but I will talk about her a little bit later on as well, to be honest. But I'm aware that a lot of the people who listen to this, Ewan, they've probably only heard us talking in passing about Serie A Femminile. They've probably not heard of most of the players that we've mentioned in the squad. So I thought it might be a good idea if we each picked a couple and just kind of gave the listeners like something to watch out for, an individual to watch out for, and maybe why. So firstly, have you got a couple of names? And I've got a list of names. So if you take your two first, I'll take mine after.
Yeah, well, I've decided to steer away from the forwards, because I think we talked about them enough anyway. So into the midfield.
You better not. You better not take.
No, don't worry.
Okay,
I'm not that dim. Manuela Giuliano, I think, is okay. Just the sort of player that she, you know, you get those midfielders where you can find yourself only watching them.
Mm-hmm.
Midfielders are my favourite type of player.
All of the Roma midfielders are that, by the way. They're all that.
She is the conductor of them all. And I think she's a wonderful player just to fixate on during a game. Won't do anything too flashy or anything. You know, she's the sort, if you don't look for her, you might not even notice her, but she's doing something fantastic. The other one who might not get a huge... she does tend to play. Is Valentina Chinoia, I really enjoy.
Yeah.
She sort of fell away a bit towards the end of the season, if memory serves, in terms of, just don't remember picking up as many goals, but in terms of set pieces and just general crossing and shooting from the edge of the box, her technique is fantastic.
She's...
And like a top corner goal is quite a likely thing with her at some point.
Chinoia is the best set piece taker in Italy. Now, you know when someone's so good at something that you can just say before they do the thing what's going to happen with it? So my mum and sister came to a match here in Parma. It was, I can't even remember. Was it Lithuania, maybe, that Italy played? And
I think you mentioned it the other day, yeah.
And
yeah.
Early in the game, I said, if she gets a free kick, she'll score. And then my mom and sister were like, okay, right, that's like scoring a free kick, something that, cool that happens in football, right? Even if you don't like football, it's quite
it's
nice.
It's one of the better things, isn't it?
Yeah. So then they got a free kick at the edge of the box in the second half. And it was one of those, we were positioned like right behind it. And I just said, this is going to be a goal. And obviously it was a goal. And I was just like, but then they were like, how did you know that? You know the way sometimes it seems like we've got magic powers, but we're just like, it's just so obvious because she's so good at free kicks. It's a joke. And yeah, I'd fully support that. I'd fully support those two picks. Quite a left field one, though, Chernoia, I'll say.
Just always enjoyed her more than most other players in the Juve team, really. So, I mean, she always stood out to me.
Well, speaking of players that we enjoy in the Juventus team, I've got, and thank you, you scared me momentarily, but Arianna Caruso, because there isn't a player like her in Italy. Like, she'll play in midfield, but that's not true. That is not an honest depiction of what she's going to do on the pitch, because she was Juventus's top scorer in Serie A this season, and I wouldn't be half surprised if she was Italy's top scorer in this Euros, despite how stacked they are in attack, which we've already discussed, because particularly if not Giacinti, sorry, Girelli, is the chosen one to play in the middle of that front three. Caruso knows how to exploit the space that Giulia's runs create, and Bonansea knows how to provide her when she makes those runs as well. But she's Roman, okay? So you've got that little bit of nastiness to her when she's not in possession, or if she's having to scrap for it. She can be scrappy. But technically, she's phenomenal. Like, because she's Roman and she started playing football at Francesco Totti's soccer school, she's got that technique. Like, she always looked up to Totti. He was her idol growing up. So she's technically excellent. She scores goals. She creates chances. And moving on from that, Agnese Bonfantini is the other one that I want to mention, because Caruso knows how to fight Bonfantini's runs. If Caruso has to drop that a little bit deeper and play more of an orchestrating role, she's more than capable of doing that as well. And Bonfantini is just... She's stupid. The first time I saw her in the flesh was in last season's Coppa Italia final. She came off the bench, and within 30 seconds, I just thought, oh, you are much more impactful than I thought you were on TV, because she's leggy. She kind of moves like a horse once she gets up ahead of speed. Like, there's no one getting nearer. We saw it twice in the Champions League this season, both at the Allianz. She scored against Lyon when it was Caruso who slipped her through. And Juventus beat Lyon 2-1 at home. Lyon went on to win the tournament outright. And I can't remember who the other one was against. Was it Servette? I don't think it was Wolfsburg, and I don't think it was Chelsea. But it was a similar one. She kind of just made her way into the box and finished it. Bonfantini, she mightn't start, but she'll make a difference when she comes off the bench. I've no doubt about it. She's impossible to stop. Brilliant, brilliant player. She just turned 23 as well, didn't she? So she's...
I was actually just looking at the ages, trying to work out who was the youngest in the squad.
By the way, it got to be Filangieri, right?
Yeah, but only just, because Caruso are both 22.
Is Filangieri 22?
Yeah, but she's... she's born in 2000.
Okay.
By
the way, Arianna Caruso, I'm glad you mentioned that. How is she 22 years old?
That's why I was looking at it. I wanted to say that she's the youngest in the squad, but she's not quite. But she's
right, but she's the youngest in the squad. She's the first ever Juventus player to win 100 matches for the club. She's won 5 straight titles with that club. Like, at 22, she's got the experience of a 30-year-old.
Yeah.
And the head of a 30-year-old. She's amazing. An amazing player. Oh,
silly.
Everyone knows how much I like Caruso, let's be honest. You more than anybody else as well. So I'm sorry. But I've got to mention Filangieri, because she's not going to play. I'd be surprised if she played a single minute in this competition. But I want to get in early, because with Italian women's football growing, she's going to be one of the... Do we say poster girls? Is that something we say? I know we say poster boy.
Yeah, it sounds worse, doesn't it?
Yeah, she's going to be one of the headliners
yeah.
for this growth of Italian women's football, because there isn't a player like her in men's nor women's football in Italy, in that she's one of the best dribblers of a football in Serie A. She's a centre-back. She's one of the best passers of a football in Serie A. She's one of the most aggressive players you'll ever see. And she spent her whole childhood being told she'd never play football because she was too small. So she's not got a big frame, but she more than makes up for it. And I don't think I've ever seen her lose a header. She's remarkable. And she's got that David Luiz-ness to her. She's got a big mop of hair, which makes her really easy to spot. And that makes her stand out a little bit more as well. But she's great. She's the most enjoyable player she's the player I've enjoyed watching the most. And there's been a few since we've been covering Serie A Femminile for, 18 months or so now. But she's a superstar. I love her. Have you got any of that kind of shout?
I think Lisa Bortin is a fantastic fullback. Like, really, really good.
Defender of the year as well.
Another one of them who, because Juve are so machine-like, can sometimes not get enough credit. You can almost level that at everyone in that Juve team. But also, in terms of centre-halves and big tackles, the top three on the official UEFA list of Saragama, Elena Linari and Bartoli are strong defenders. And, you know, not in the sense of... But then they get the ball and they can't do anything with it. They can still... especially Sally Gowen, she's fantastic with the ball. But, you know, they don't take shit, them three. They are strong defenders. Oh, wait, we're not patronising.
it's fine. It's fine. I think that's one of the okay ones.
So they're 33, 28 and 31. So you get what I mean? They're they are wise defenders who mm-hmm.
Who's 28?
Poitin.
Ah, okay. Wait, we're not talking about Poitin. Sorry. Sorry.
She's only 25, though. I would have guessed 28, maybe. For her.
She's Do you know she lives with Caruso? They live together.
Oh,
it's quite nice. They do videos sometimes. It's funny.
I don't think I follow either, but on whatever that's on.
What I will recommend, actually, do you know what? There's a YouTube video, actually. I don't know if you like YouTubers and things like that, but there's an Italian YouTuber who does like a. Yeah, I sounded like Kevin.
That was the oldest thing in the world. YouTubers.
Well, there's an Italian YouTuber, right, who does like the a penalty shootout type thing with Caruso and Boateng. And then they go back to their house and they have lunch together and stuff. And it's quite nice. I'll send you the link if I find it. It's worth
a
watch.
Way to learn Italian.
Well, I don't know where Boateng's from, but Caruso's isn't easy. She's Roman. It's not the easiest, but yeah, why not? It's a way to practice, a way to exercise your Italian. Generally positive vibes about this Italy team. A little bit of confusion about the squad, but more positivity than anything else coming into this tournament, I think. And without the expectations of winning it, because they're not going to win it. I think we could say that already, right?
Yeah, I mean, that would be very mad. I mean, it'd be cool, though, wouldn't it? I mean, imagine if suddenly everyone knew of these players.
I'd be so happy. I would be so happy if they won it. But yeah, it isn't going to happen. We should say that. So listeners, watch Italy. You'll have a nice time, but don't expect them to win the competition. Quarterfinals will be very good. Semifinals will be a joke. If they got to the final, who knows what could happen then, because they've got those Saragama, basically. Do you know what, as well? When I was at the Coppa Italia final, and you were just, even when Juve were losing, there were times where I'd just watch her for a bit and think, well, obviously Juventus win everything, because how could you not if she's in your team? She doesn't allow you to lose. She's a freak, like an absolute
freak. She's frightening in the best way. Right.
Also to be on the same team as, right? She'd scare you into playing well type thing.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. I'd be terrified of her. Mm. Like, it'd be useful, but it'd be terrifying. I'd be quite pleased when I like when my day with her's finished.
You imagine keeping a clean sheet beside her, you'd be pleased, wouldn't you?
Oh god, yeah. Just through fear of getting beaten up. the only person she was scared of was Staskova.
I reckon Gamma would take Staskova.
I don't know.
There's no one in Serie A Femminile winning a fight against Saragama. If it's anyone, it's Filangieri.
I think she'd win it more on attitude rather than physical strength.
Possibly. You know what I mean? Possibly. But anyway, that'll do, I think. Ewan, thank you.
Lisa Bartini is from the Veneto, by the way.
Oh, yeah, so you won't understand it, she says, either. No. She'll just curse with every second word. Although I don't think she did in the video. But the things people from Veneto are saying are the type of things that get people suspended in Serie A because it's.
I've
forgotten the word again.
I've read books that have made it clear that it's the most right wing part of the country.
Yeah, but you know what's odd about it is they are one of the worst regions for the blasphemy. And usually it's really odd.
That doesn't compute.
No, not for me either, but it's one of those things. I said something recently. I'm not going to say it on the podcast because we'll be blocked. But I said something recently and
did you blaspheme?
The bad one. The bad one that you hear every day. But, like, I think it's funny. Like,
the bad one for... The bad word? Like, the worst word?
No, like, neither of the words are bad, but when you put them together, they become really bad. For reasons that I still don't understand, because I'll tell you off air what they are. But, yeah. Anyway. That'll do it. I don't know if I was going anywhere with that, but I guess not. We'll be back with a couple of pods during the course of the tournament. Hoping to get a guest on as well for after the France game. So we'll see what happens there. But this is going out on Spotify. So everybody, we are continuing on Patreon throughout the summer. It's patreon.com/forzaitalianfootball. We've done a couple of bonus podcasts already. And unless Italy win the Euros, you're not going to hear us on Spotify again until the beginning of next season with the season preview. So do head over to Patreon and join up there. Ewan, thank you very much for your time. I'll speak to you again very soon, I'm sure.
Yes.
Oh, that was bad even for you. Goodbye, everybody. We'll speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.